ahead here for Zusi. Puts the double team to pick it up. Heads back for Fail.
Just as I say that, Boswell hesitates in this very moment. This is that little gap, great run from the outside, diagonal run, a crisscross run that creates all sorts of problems. And look at Bruner and Boswell drop, and then decide to step at the last moment. That is an outstanding pass from Benny Faulhaber. Look at the little scoop, but how about that skill from Dom Dwyer? Hit the brakes, send the defender flying by. Composure, left foot slots it in. That is an outstanding flick pass from Benny Faulhaber, but an even better, calm, composed finish from Dwyer.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the beautiful game. That audio was obviously the call on the Dwyer goal that punched Sporting Kansas City's ticket to its first MLS Cup since Peter Vermes was a player. We'll be talking about both of those men quite a bit today. By way of intro, the beautiful game is a podcast for the new fan of the game we love. While there are many intelligent podcasts out there about soccer, many, if not most of them, perhaps rightly so, assume the listener has a fairly deep knowledge about the game and its history. This podcast does not make those assumptions. We start at the beginning, and in every show we try to explain instead of assume. Our first season, of which this is the final episode, previous shows have featured Greg Lawless, Kartik Krishnayer, and Nick Geber, place the groundwork for covering these topics by having long-form interviews with some people who have made soccer a huge part of their lives. With me today is Per Lahti, who sits near me in the quieter, I would call it, Johnson County West Stand between the Cauldron and South Stand. Per, good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. We'll be taking questions for our guests, if you'd like, via Twitter. If you go to Twitter and it's at TBeautifulGame, the letter T, and then Beautiful Game spelled out. If you just tag us in a Twitter post, we'll be able to answer your question. If you prefer the old-fashioned radio call-in, you can call us at 213-286-6720. Again, that's 213-286-6720. If you follow Sporting Kansas City, you've read Steve Brisendine's stuff either on MLSsoccer.com or any number of other places. He's also reliable for budget food recommendations in our great city. And I was talking to him a bit before the show. Steve, what's on your mind? Where are you eating a lot these days?
I found that Mad Jack's on Truce is a frequent stop. A little fish place just north of 63rd Street on Truce. It's on the way back from sporting training back toward Brookside, where you usually like to hole up and write. And nice people, good fish, and always a good recommendation for me.
I'm actually getting hungry thinking about that. I want to take us back to our intro and about Dom Dwyer. And nobody really rated him at the beginning of the season, and I don't think any of us could possibly have predicted what he was going to do down there in USL Pro. And leaving aside the discussion of the MLS-USL Pro partnership in general, what the hell do you think happened to Dom Dwyer down there?
Well, my take is that he went down there with something to prove. He's candid about the fact that he wasn't really thrilled about the being sent there in the first place, especially when he had hoped to be on loan to St. Mirren near the start of the season. Sporting nixed that and then loaned him out to USL Pro. I think he took that as a bit of an affront at the very outset. Then I think he threw himself into it with the goal of proving that he belonged back at this level. And I think he had a good experience down there, obviously, got some confidence, and found the net on a regular basis. And that's just tremendous for a forward at any level.
Well, and he created a good kind of problem by creating a forward competition back here. And I think some weeks ago there was an article about Peter Vermes's relationship to Spanish-speaking designated players. We had Jefferson, the Omar Bravo fiasco as that season wound down. And now this guy who he brought in to be our clinical striker, fighting for position with Dom. And Steve, is this really a problem? We've got two center forwards fighting to start. You know, I think some Sporting Kansas City fans think this is a problem.
The problem, I think, is a problem a lot of clubs would like to have. look, Baylor is far from out of the picture. Look who scored the goal that put Sporting into the conference final. That was Baylor in extra time against New England. Baylor is not just completely dropped off the map. And people were upset that he came in with a minute to go against Houston in that last game. Well, something fluky happens, and then you're looking at overtime. Then you've got Baylor out there with fresh legs. It was a tactical move, I think, to get him out there just in case something fluky happened. Look, I think Dom is the guy who's in form right now. I think Baylor was sort of Baylor's team earlier on this year. But, you know, if you've got two center forwards with that kind of potential, I don't think that's a problem.
Do you think the teams figured out Baylor? I mean, we all know that forwards go through, they're streaky sometimes. They go through runs of form, and we had that long goal drought from Baylor. Do you think people finally figured him out because he hadn't been in the league? Or, you know, was it just a bad streak for him?
I think for a while he was not getting the kind of service that he thrives on. I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to create the way that Dom is in terms of making the runs and working on the ball to create the opportunities in front of goal. I think he's a guy who likes service in space so that he can have that finish. And I think for a while that there was a pretty good stretch where he was not getting the service. Bulk of the service was going to Kai. When Kai came back from Norwich, you look at when Kai was coming on and scoring a lot of goals, that sort of was matched by a tailing off in Baylor's production because I think Kai was the guy who was getting most of the service. Sporting for a while weren't getting the balls through the middle of the park. They were taking it to the wings and bombing it in from the sides. And again, that's not the sort of ball that plays to Baylor's strengths as a finisher.
So in that respect, I mean, a lot of people, including myself, definitely including myself, who have been criticizing Vermees. Wouldn't it be possible to play a formation or a tactic that would rely on two center forwards, like a 4-4-2 or something like that?
With a 4-4-2, though, you still have a guy who's more of a withdrawn forward. And I don't think that either Dom or Baylor would be the guy who really fits into that. If you're running a 4-4-2, I think the guy you'd have in that withdrawn spot would be more like a guy like Sooney, who's got the leg from distance to be a threat to have the layback and drive it in from outside the box. I don't know that offense-wise, personality-wise, that you can run an offense with two target center forwards. I mean, it could be wrong, but I don't see either one of those guys playing that offset, sort of playing behind the main striker kind of a thing. Maybe Dom could, but I think with getting both those guys on the pitch at the same time, it would take some adjusting because they both have that striker's mentality of I want the ball and I want to do something with it when I've got it. So
absolutely, both of them wants to finish.
Pardon?
Yeah, absolutely. Both of them are always going for a goal and want to try to finish. So I can see how it wouldn't work with those two, but ultimately you could have, like you said, Isuni or someone on the outside to create the 4-4-2 and maybe even put Zusi as a, you know, more an attack midfielding kind of position and play like a diamond formation. And instead of having a 2-4-3-3 where you go really far out on the wingers, because I don't really know if we have really that good of wingers if you're really looking at it. I mean, we used to have Kai, used to be a workhorse on the right side, and then Zusi, of course, or CJ. But if you're looking in the sense of a traditional out in the corner, cross it into the middle and try to finish it, those kind of wingers is not really on this side either, though, right? Or am I completely off target here?
No, it's funny you mentioned the diamond because we were just talking training the other day that Sporting actually, I don't know that the diamond would be a bad fit for them. I don't know, you know, and who knows, maybe it's something that they'll roll out at some point. But they've got the personnel where they can run it, absolutely. Will they? I'm not sure because the high press, I think, is better suited to the 4-3-3 that Peter likes to run. What's different about this 4-3-3 is the wingers may not be the guys up front. I mean, because you look at Zusi ostensibly, he's a winger, but he's all over the park. I mean, he's more of a roamer than a winger. Your wingers are your fullbacks in this setup. with the overlapping runs. You look at Chance making the run down the right side, Seth making the run down the left side. Those guys are combo fullback wingers. I mean, sort of I'm going to say Sergio Ramos type mode, where they make the overlapping runs, range forward, and they're the ones bombing the ball in from the flanks.
Absolutely. I mean, I personally am a huge fan of Myers and Sinovic, you know, because the amount that they work and how hard they run their gaming game up, and they're there every single game, I think they are part of the cornerstones of making the entire team work. So with that said, though, you know, going back to Peter Vermees, you know, he's a 4-3-3 no matter what. He will play a 4-3-3 defensive, which is kind of oxymoron because I'm not sure how you play a defensive three forward formation, but beyond that point, but he's very good at finding talent and being able to finding the, you know, players, kind of making them fit. So with him getting, well, I wouldn't say getting rid of, but selling Kai Kamara, is that the strike of genius or was that luck of the draw?
You know, I'm not sure. When that happened, I think that caught everybody by surprise. Not only the fact that he was going back over, but that he's going back to a championship team and a struggling championship team. I don't know, because at the time, I mean, you look at where he was being productive. He was scoring a lot of goals and doing really good things in the air. He and Sunni had a real rapport going, and then all of a sudden he's gone. And a lot of people thought, and I wasn't sure, you know, are they doing this to the, maybe, you know, they're going for, they were going to make the playoffs. I knew that. But are they conceding some position? Are they conceding the Shield race? What are they doing? Are they looking to build so much for next year that they're mortgaging the end of this season? But at the same time, you saw what happened early on in the season. They were winning without Kai. They basically, when Sporting had been three teams this season. There was a team at the start of the season that was Bieler's team. And at the middle of the season, when Kai came back and got back into a groove, they were Kai's team. And now they're a team where, yeah, Dom is up front and doing a lot of good things, but this is a team that a lot of the leadership, a lot of the scoring and all that is sort of coming by committee. I mean, you look at the guys who scored in the playoffs, there are a lot of different guys who've come up. You know, Colin has scored. Seth has scored. I'm going to go back all the way to the last game of the regular season because that was the game that got Sporting home field advantage, and Lawrence Olam scores the decisive goal. There's not one dominant scorer out there right now. So it changed the character of the team. Right now it looks like looks like a stroke of genius. It could have been luck of the draw, but if it was luck of the draw, it was great luck of the draw. They've got that money to spend in the offseason, and they're in the MLS Cup final. It was a stroke of genius, and you know it streamlines the team a little bit to where you don't have so many dominant personalities up front. I know people hated to see Kai go. I hated to see Kai go. I mean, he's beloved here in Kansas City with good reason. But I don't think that they were trying to mess things up. I think they were taking a calculated risk that the rest of the team would step up, that they could make this deal for Kai, get the money to spend in the offseason, and that the rest of the team would step up. And the rest of the team has stepped up. I shouldn't be surprised that they've done that, because this has been an ensemble cast all along. Guys who embrace their roles, guys who step up at times to make plays, and they're not dependent on any one player. They're not driven by star power, like the way that some other clubs are. So I'm not surprised that they've stepped up. It was still at the time, it was a little bit dicey to see if that was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it caught us kind of off guard. I mean, I remember talking to a bunch of the Calder people and others as it happened, and I even mentioned that I was kind of disappointed that he actually came back, not because of his personality. Part to none, is absolutely exceptional, and everyone loves him, and he's a great person, and he's a great player, but I kind of wanted him to succeed over in England as well, because, you know, his age also doesn't quite help us. You know, I've always been, you know, you need the experience and routine, but you also need to look forward towards the future, and, you know, with us having CJ Teal, we have Zuni, we had, you know, Dwyer, all these guys are, 20 to 24 years old, you know, and yeah, Gehler was the experience, maybe we could move forward and make those young players work and for the future and the long term, you know?
I think so. That man's got a good young core of players. I mean, look at Uri. What, he just turned 21? And the guy's already playing with a lot of maturity and skill. You got Dom, you've got Sunni, you've got experience and youth blending pretty well together in this club. I think they're going to continue to build for the future. I'm excited to see what happens with some of these younger guys next season as they're getting one more year under them to get familiar with the system what happens from then on. But I think with that money that they have now from the Kai deal, if they make Champions League again, they'll get money for that. They'll have some money to spend going into the off season. You know, will they use it for retention? Will they use it for acquisition? It's going to be really interesting to see what they do. But I think they've got a good nucleus. They just need to build on the strength of what they already have.
And, you know, you're talking about the future and you're talking about this young core, Steve. You know, expectations are a funny thing. I've often shared with people, you go to Busch Stadium and everyone can boo now. Yes, I'm a Cardinals fan. I went to college in St. Louis. But you see 11 World Series pennants out there in right field, and you go into that stadium and you have the expectation of winning. And I remember that Paint the Wall campaign that we had for Open Cup last year, and I thought that was brilliant. With the ownership group seeming to do everything right, a brand new stadium, regular U.S. Men's National Team appearances at our stadium with our own players playing on that team, are we just a bit spoiled, Steve, or have we entered an era of reasonable expectations?
Probably a bit of both. I think the reasonable expectation is that they're going to be competitive every year. They're going to compete for that MLS Cup. And at least be in the conference final every year, and they should be competing for the cup itself on a fairly regular basis. That's the commitment that the club has made, that's what they want, and they've shown the willingness to back that up. So I think, yeah, that's a reasonable expectation. But I think what happens, a lot of people who came on as fans when the new park opened, I mean, the fan base exploded then. And they don't recall the pretty crummy years between, you know, in 2004, let's say, in 2011, when there was some success, it wasn't a gigantic amount, when they were even for a while thinking about pulling the team out of Kansas City, relocating it someplace else. There's I think some people who've only known that success since the new park opened, maybe they're a little bit spoiled because that's all they've known. But then again, I think it's reasonable to expect that they're going to be competitive because that's the goal. That's the goal that has been set. That's the goal that they've spent money on. So it's maybe a little bit of both. The people who don't remember the lean years can't appreciate it quite as much as the people who've only known success. But I think that the expectation of success is not unfounded. You look at clubs around the league and you have certain expectations. You have an expectation that Toronto's going to throw a ton of money at people and not get a whole lot out of it. You have the expectation that New York is going to have some high-profile players, but they're not going to get all the way to the cup final on the backs of those players. The expectation, which didn't admit this year, that the Galaxy are always going to be have something to say about the conference final. There are teams that kind of confound expectations or have rewritten their expectations, but there's certain clubs you look around the league and you have those expectations. Well, Sporting is a club. You expect that they're not going to have a huge foreign star on the team. You expect that they're going to work their tails off and press, and you expect that they're going to defend like crazy, and you expect that they're going to be in the conversation for Supporters Shield and for the conference regular season championship and the playoffs every year out.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that's something that's going to stay away, and you know, as a professional team, no matter what team or what sport, you know, they should hopefully stay true to try at least push through to end up in the playoff or just get out of the regular season ahead. And it's a little bit different than in, you know, how it works here in regards to Europe, but here at least it, with the salary caps and everything like that, there needs to be, everyone should have that kind of goal. Otherwise, they should probably not even be a team in the league.
No.
So
it's I think there's some. I say you look at New England. There's some benign neglect going on there. I don't think there's. They're still the stepchild of that relationship with the Patriots. There's some clubs, Chivas. I don't know what kind of expectations they have, but it's just kind of a mess out there. But yeah, with the fact with the salary cap and with the fact that you can basically reboot your season every year, yeah, everybody ought to have that kind of expectation. But Sporting have proven that they're able to get the results and to go back and be competitive year after year in a pretty volatile league.
Yep, absolutely. So with that, I want to kind of like take us through our lineup, and lineup is kind of vague, but you know, essentially the main starters over the course of the year, and you know, once you kind of feedback on what do you think, how they've done, and do you think they will be back next year, or why not, and is that okay?
Okay.
Basically, and
sure.
We're gonna kind of go through essentially by position here. I'm gonna start out with the forwards. So like Sunni Saad, what do you think?
I think Sunni made a lot of strides this year. Now, he's not been playing as much recently, but he had a stretch during the middle of the season where he was really, really productive, both in the pressing role that Peter likes from his wingers and in providing service. I think with Kai going overseas, I think that kind of took away a little bit of what he was able to provide, because he was a guy who could deliver that ball to an aerial target pretty accurately, and also a guy who was going to score some goals. I think he'll be back next year because I think there's still a real role for him in this club, and it's been nice to see him progress. I think if he lives up to his potential, he could be very good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he came in, was it last year, first time, and he scored in his first game for the team as a substitution, and followed him since, and I think he's definitely good. Do you think he will become a regular starter or so?
I would think so. I mean, I think the international experience is only going to help him there with Lebanon.
Yeah.
I know, you know, it was kind of tough to see yet another American-born guy go to an overseas team, but that's the new reality. America's starting to export soccer talent. And, you know, he's going to be playing against some pretty good sides if he stays, you know, active with Lebanon. He's going to be playing against Iran. He's going to be playing against South Korea, Japan, Australia. So that international experience is going to be good for him. I look for him to be a regular next year, absolutely.
So take us over to someone who started off very well last season and then unfortunately got hurt. And not sure he ever really came back this season, but Jacob Pederson.
You know, Jake is – he has struggled to finish this year. That's one thing that I think – might hurt him, but the thing that I like about Jacob is he's tireless in that pressure role. Somebody came up with the phrase defensive winger, and I like that. It's like having when he's in there, it's like having an extra ball-winning midfielder up top. He's not finishing, and that's not where he wants to be, where he's not getting the goals. But in terms of work rate, in terms of attacking another team's back line and harassing them in the middle third as well, he's a tough guy to beat for that. Now, is that going to be enough to keep him next year? I don't know. I almost wonder if they shift him back into a midfield spot, maybe sort of like, you know, Rodgers' role was on that left side, and the role that Naga has now is the pit bull out there, who's the ball winner, who's disrupting the other team. I think there's always room for a guy out there who's willing to embrace those defensive responsibilities and the pressure responsibilities. I just don't know if it's as a forward. I'd like to see him maybe transition into a pressure role in the midfield and see how he does there.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a fan favorite. I think because we see how hard he works out there, and if that's a hallmark of Sporting Kansas City, you know what you and Pear were talking about with Sinovic and Myers, that hard work, that hustle, that never give up. And he definitely has struggled to finish, but he hasn't failed in terms of creating chances.
Right.
I just hope that's enough to save him.
Yeah, I'd like to hope so too, and especially if his job description changes, because for what they would be asking of a ball winning midfielder, I don't think that you could find anybody who would work harder and be better at just harassing other teams 90 minutes. You know, just that he's got that engine that never quits. He's only got high gear, and you saw how when he's on, he can bust things up in the back, win the ball back for Sporting, and maybe he's not the guy who finishes, but he's the guy who creates those opportunities by taking the ball away. So I'd like to see him back, maybe in a different role.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, his hard work is, you know, like Steven said, Myers and Seth, they are hard to know that aspect. Work ethics are great. But kind of takes us over to CJ then. And he's been hit and miss, I would say, this year. My personal opinion on him is that he is a great player. He falls down a little bit too much, maybe. But maybe better balance, a little bit better strength, something. Because I never seen a forward fall down as much as he has.
Well, it's I think Dom is I'd like to see Dom on his feet a lot more. He's looking for calls in the area, and Peter likes the fact that the Dom will go after people in the area and try to make something happen. You know, you saw him in Champions League winning that penalty down there, and some people think, well, maybe that's not the best thing that could have happened to him, because now he's looking for that every time he's in the box. But at the same time, you have to admire that aggressiveness. You have to look at the fact that he is trying to go toward goal, and he's trying to make something happen. Yeah, I would like to see him stay on his feet more. Would like to see him a little less trying to sell fouls and penalties. But you know, he's a forward, and that's part of the job description, especially once you get inside the 18.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Dom is, you know, it goes back to Europe, and depending on where you're in Europe, but especially if you go on to Italy and so on, diving is one of the first things you will learn there. So as a striker or as a forward. So the foundation of keeping Suni and Dom being part of the starter then next year?
I would think so, definitely. And if Baylor is still around next year, which I don't see any reason to indicate that he wouldn't be, then I would see both of them, Dom and Baylor, having some pretty significant roles to play up front. But I would definitely see Dom back as a regular player next year, if not not a 34 match starter, then a guy who's still going to get a lot of starts in and a lot of play in other competitions as well.
Yeah. So with that covering Baylor, though, then if you think about it, Teal is kind of also a very center striker. Is three too many?
Yeah. I don't know what we do with Teal. What Sporting do with Teal?
Because he was very good, and then he got hurt as well. So
yeah, he was playing really really well when he got hurt. And when he's been in this year, his first touch has gotten a lot better. He's just in a crowded field right now. And I don't know if they can carry that many center forwards into the lineup next year or in the roster next year. And Teal deserves to be playing, you know, especially coming back from that ACL. He looks like he's come back pretty strongly from that. I don't know if where he's going to be playing next year is here or not. That's going to be tough. I will say that I think that there are three main center forwards now in the conversation. I think there will be two center forwards in the conversation at the start of next year. I don't know which two for sure, but I think that the number will be down to two next year in the conversation. I could be wrong, but that's my feeling.
Yeah, I guess a lot depends on what they decide to do with Baylor at that point. And it's unfortunate for Teal that maybe his faith relies on them deciding to keep another one or not.
Yeah, I think it probably does. And you know, I think Teal has, again, he's worked hard to come back. I think he will be a solid contributor someplace next year, whether it's with Sporting or with somebody else. I think he'll be contending for a starting spot and a solid contributor someplace next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to circle around the CJ Chapon, where do you see him?
CJ is just he's still a bit of an enigma sometimes. So when he's on, when he's strong, when he knows what he wants to do, he's ferocious. There's still not so much lately, but there were times this year when he just looked kind of lost out there. And I think, you know, he's coming on again. He's been really streaky this year. But I like the way he's finishing the season. I like the way he was opportunistic and bounced on that giveaway from Boswell the other night. Peter is really still, I think, high on CJ. He was talking the other night, you know, CJ still needs to figure out how dominant he can be. And I think he'll get at least one more season here in the system to really get a chance to show how dominant he can be. Because he's you know, look at the fouls he draws. You look at the mismatches he can create against defenders. But he has got to get more of a killer's mentality out there, I think, sometimes. He's a bright guy. He's a cerebral guy, but there's times when I think he overthinks things, and he's got to be a little bit more visceral, I think, in his play, and a little bit meaner in his play. And if he does that, then you know, he's another guy with a really bright future who could be a nightmare for oppositions for years to come.
Yeah, that's the thing. The strength is the one thing, because I think he sometimes let himself get pushed around a little bit too much. And I'm not sure if it's because he doesn't use his body or his whatever it is, but sometimes it seems like anyone can just move him along, even though he should be the dominant force, having control of the ball and moving forward. But it might just be the age and experience and, you know, just getting there. And, you know, he's so young and he's been doing very well for his age and, you know, he could only get better.
Yeah, I think so. Again, he's the kind of guy who plays with a lot of spirit and a lot of fun out there. You can tell when things are going well, he's just beaming and he likes to play, loves the game. But I think he's got to develop a little bit more of a mean streak. And if he develops that, can kind of lock down the emotions and play with sort of a little bit more of a grimness, I guess you would say. I think he's going to be a nightmare for people.
You know, Steve, you referred to CJ maybe relying on his instincts a bit more, and we go back to that classic lineup of CJ, Kai, and Teal up top that seems like a lifetime ago now. That if you think about how Kai Kamara plays, that sort of instinctive, reactive, I'm just going to let my body go where I think it's, I'm going to let it do its thing. I agree with you on CJ. And I suppose that kind of brings us back to why CJ may have been lost at the beginning of the season, as you say, because he was so used to that very good dynamic that we saw was fruitful with him and Kai Kamara. And without Kai there, he was sort of, you know, in a new role and wasn't quite sure what to do with that. But Fielder's been a big come down from his rookie season.
I think it's a fair assessment, because he and Kai did have a really good relationship, really good chemistry on and off the field, and I think maybe he was a little bit lost when Kai was gone. But he's been a guy who, though, in the last several seasons, even last year when he had a bit of a slump at midseason when he was hurt and he came on strong, he is a guy who does come on late down the stretch of the season. And, you know, I think if he can show that again in MLS Cup and then pick up that intensity all through the year next year, I think he'll be fine.
I think that's fair enough. For any of you who are just joining us, you are listening to The Beautiful Game on the AMDG Radio Network. I'm Stephen Heiner with Perilotti, and we are chatting with Steve Brisendine about Sporting Kansas City past, present, and future. And we have just talked about the forwards, and it's my job to hit the midfield, Steve. So we're gonna talk about the man who has occasionally shown up this year, but when he's shown up, he's been absolutely brilliant, and that's Benny Failhaber.
Well, I think, I don't know if you saw my piece that came out today on Benny. Benny is, right now, he's comfortable in the system. He's finally got the fitness. I mean, about, I guess, maybe halfway to two-thirds of the way through the season is when he really kind of hit that fitness stride for what Peter wants out of that midfielder spot. He was my man of the match for the game against Houston. I think, you know, he was pretty masterful out there, and I think he's been pretty good out there through the playoffs. He's now showing why they brought him in. Yeah, he was uneven early on. He was getting used to things. You know, and I think what might have hurt him was when Nagamura got hurt. And he was building some chemistry with Uri with Naga early on the year. Then Naga was hurt quite a bit, and things kind of changed for Benny. And then he was also struggling with the physical requirements of the position. But I think he's getting that locked down. You look at him late in the season, he has been good down the stretch. There were times in the middle of the year when, yeah, he was not looking that good. But I have really no complaints about his play at all down the stretch of the regular season and then thus far in the playoffs. And I think that flick that he sent on ahead to Dom to set him up for that goal against Houston, that winning goal, was just a really pretty and a heady and a just well-placed pass. That's the kind of thing that they've been looking for him since they brought him in. And I think he's in stride now. He's up to speed. He's comfortable with the people out there now, and I think he's done what they've asked him to since he's really come up to speed physically.
No, I think that point is well taken. So I guess the question is, can we keep this version of Benny Failhaber going forward? Do you think that's viable?
I think, of course I do. You know, he's had a year to adjust, but he's a competitor. I mean, he's not the kind of guy who's out there just goofing around, you know, drawing the paycheck. He's a competitor. He wants to do well. I think that I don't see any reason that he would go backward, barring injury. He's not a young guy anymore. You know, he knows the game. He knows his job. He's a professional. I don't see any reason at all that he would go backward at all.
Fair enough. Speaking of another sort of elder statesman on the team, Paolo Nagamura, I've been a fan of his. I just feel, you know, with Roger Espinoza gone this season, he's been this rock of stability, and we lost him for quite a few weeks due to injury. Where do you think he fits in with us going forward?
Oof, you know, that's a tough question. Because he has had the nagging injuries over the last, you know, not just his tenure with Sporting, but before that. And that's the question mark about him. There's no question at all about his heart. I mean, you saw the character of the team changed when he came back from injury for the playoffs. Just ramped up the intensity. He's tough. He's aggressive. He's not going to back down from anybody. But the injuries are the question mark. I mean, you can't have a guy who's that important to the team be gone that long, because he's crucial. So I think that team's ball-winning efforts in midfield and the pressing efforts in midfield, you see how much better they are at doing that sort of thing when he's back on the pitch. But you've got to have that from him for more than half the regular season. That he played 17 games this year, half the regular season. You've got to know that you're going to get more than that from him going forward, or he becomes a question mark.
I think a lot of people didn't realize what a big role Julio Cesar played until he wasn't here with us anymore. And I think, you know, with such a young group, you know, even if we only have him for 17 games, Paolo's our stopgap, unless, of course, you can bring in that elder statesman to fill that Julio Cesar, Paolo Nagamura role. So I think you're right. I think he's either got to get healthy, stay healthy, or we he might have to look at another option. I hate to say that because I really like him. I think he provides a lot for us, but you're right. He needs to provide for us across more games for us to be more competitive.
Yeah. Again, there's no discounting what he's done in the playoffs, especially going full 90 twice in 4 days when he hadn't played for months before that. I mean, that shows how tough he is, how committed he is to this club. But yeah, they did miss Julio. You know, he defined Wiley. He knew where to be positionally to blow up attacks. He wasn't at the time that he was here. He was not the kind of guy who was going to tear up and down the pitch for 90 minutes at a time. But he knew where to be on the pitch, so he didn't have to. And they really, I think, Uri is more of a connector guy than Julio was. He's not that sort of what Peter called him, the heat-seeking missile, who's going to track the ball down and blow up attacks. Uri does it in different ways. He's very good at stopping attacks on the ground with all the interceptions he's got, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to track back and stop stuff from getting to the back line the way that Julio was. So yeah, I think they're going to need somebody who's going to have that ball winning, that tough, hard-nosed midfield presence. And again, maybe if Jake drops back into the midfield going forward, maybe that's the two in tandem are going to be enough to get Sporting through. I wouldn't mind seeing both of them out there in that kind of a role next year, but we'll have to see what they do going forward in that kind of ball-winning spot.
You know, Steve, I love that idea of Jake Peterson dropping back into that midfield role. I think that provides a lot for us now, especially in terms of pace and just tenacity, reminding us of Roger Espinoza, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You alluded to him briefly, Yuri Rozelle. Been a pretty really interesting story, even got featured, you know, for MLS as part of his story. You know, someone who comes to America, is working on his business degree, learning English. I remember one of the preseason interviews he gave was totally in Spanish, and he's really progressing. Are we setting him up to be, you know, a Matt Beasley or a Graham Zusi, a long-time player here?
If they can keep him. You know, he's going to get the kind of season he had this year and the kind of season I think he's going to have going forward, because I think he'd be back next year, but he's going to get noticed. He's going to be a guy that they're going to have to spend to keep him here once he really hits his stride and his potential, because he is fantastic in terms of linking the back line and the midfield and the forwards. He makes himself diagonal better than anybody I've seen in traffic. I mean, he's got a way to get that leg out there and make a pass that you don't see that he's going to be able to make or get his leg out there to stop the ball. Very smart player and, you know, more physical than I think that we thought he was going to be coming in. I mean, he's not a heavily built guy, and he's a guy coming in from Barca's system. You don't typically associate that with being able to bang around in the defensive midfield. But I think he has done – he's been a key part of the season. And a key cog in Sporting's machine all year long. I mean, look at him. It's aside from the yellow card suspensions, which are to be expected in that defensive midfield spot, he's been out there, and he's been very good when he's been out there. You very rarely see him completely just goof things up. Very solid, very steady, and I think he's going to be an important guy coming up. They're going to have to, if they want him to be a long term guy, they're going to have to pay to keep making him a long term guy.
I think that's fair enough. Someone whose number might be up for us, do you think Peterson Joseph?
Well, the health concerns now, you know, that's the main thing. You wonder what's going on with this passing out in training. You know, I've seen him play better for Haiti than he has for Sporting. I haven't seen the passing wizardry that we would kind of thought that he was going to provide, and he still has moments where he's going to dump the ball to no place. So I don't know. Of all the midfielders out that we've talked about so far, he's the one I would least see coming back, just because I don't see that he has really asserted himself as a guy who can take that spot and make it his own.
Yeah. One of the things about him is every time you really see him playing, dominating midfield is so important, and he is almost invisible 90% of the time he's out there. You never see him. It's almost like you're one man short to have a red card somewhat sent off. He's never been there and done these big things like Fail Harbor or Cesar or any of these Nagamura. And it's partially maybe because he's young. I heard he's very technical, very talented, and I have no doubts. But for some reason, every time he comes on the field, it doesn't appear that the synergies with the team is not there, or something is going on, but, best of wishes for his health, of course. That's the most important.
Yeah, that's the main thing with him. I mean, he's got to figure out what's going on with him health wise, and then make a choice from there. But I've not seen him do anything dominant in the midfield. I've seen some pretty passes, but I've also seen some giveaways. And I haven't seen a lot of the kind of solid defense that you need in that high pressing 4-3-3. This is not there for me.
Well, we've also got Lawrence Olam, or Leaping Larry Olam, as I've heard him called. Definitely helped us out in the playoffs. Do you see him as a solid backup?
I like Lawrence. I like his versatility. He can play that back. Remember, can't forget, he played the full 120 at center back in the Open Cup final when Colin was out on yellow card suspension. He's played that defensive mid spot, sometimes as a double D mid. If you notice, a couple times in Champions League, a few other times, I think, during regular season. For me, he's almost had a double D mid out there with Lawrence and with Uri. He's a guy who is, he's not spectacular, but he's another guy who works his tail off, who's pretty good positionally, and is not afraid to get in and do the dirty work of ball winning and going up in the air, and he's actually not too bad with his feet either. I mean, we saw the goal that he scored against Philadelphia. He's had some other good work with his feet. I like Lawrence. I think in terms of as a player, as a person too. I mean, he's hardworking. He knows his roles on the team, and he works hard to fill those. I think he's a guy that you keep going forward. Absolutely.
Well, the last person we want to talk about here is Graham Zusi, the man whose star has continued to rise. We've seen him be feted by Mexico for helping them get to the World Cup. Mexico needed Graham Zusi's help to get to the World Cup. I mean, what more can you say about this guy? But I feel that despite how his star has been rising on the international scene, I feel that his play for Sporting has been very uneven. I've even cringed lately watching him do set pieces, and I thought Benny Failhaber is actually far more effective on set pieces. The few opportunities he's had, and he scored that free kick that was amazing. And I think I almost feel like Sporting, his game with Sporting has suffered for his rise with the national team. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I would kind of disagree with that. I think maybe he hasn't had the results on the set pieces, but you look where he is on the pitch. You look how many guys he breaks down with the ball. You look at him in traffic. He'll go in without the ball, come out with it. Maybe it's not translating to the numbers in assists and in goals. And maybe they should be looking at Benny for more set pieces. But I don't. I think in one of the, a lot of things that Peter wants him to do out there, especially in roaming, he looks like he's pretty much got a license to roam around the pitch now. to go in and to break up what the other team is trying to do, to go and link up with Benny, with Uri, to get the ball through the midfield. I think he's doing a lot of work in maybe a less glamorous role, but it's no less important. And I don't think he's had any fall off in the quality of his work through the midfield. Now maybe up front the results aren't coming quite as much as they had, but I think in the work through the midfield and breaking down other teams and busting up what they're trying to do, I think he's been very good.
Well, I don't disagree with you. He's definitely been putting in more work. I think that Houston game, he almost found this, sixth gear in terms of how tired he must have been, and he just kept pushing. So I think you make a very good point that we may not see the stats bearing out what he's doing in terms of what we've seen from him in the past, but he's definitely excelling in that work rate. I think you make a good point.
Oh, yeah. And you look at how far he's come with his club, and then with playing for his country, and where he was when he first arrived, and where he is now. I mean, it's light years ahead. And you look at when he's working on a guy who just had that kind of experience. I mean, when he's on, he can make an opposing defender just look like a little kid. And again, there maybe not so much with the set pieces in the production lately, but in terms of wearing out a defense, of taking another team's legs out from under him, I think it's hard for us to find anybody better on the Sporting roster right now.
Yeah, and I agree. He is so good with the ball. I guess that's kind of where I would like to see, CJ being more challenging when he runs with the ball, be more dominant and challenging the defenders to let them do mistakes instead of waiting for a defender to come to you. But so in regards to Sousa, do you think he fits better as a midfielder or as a forward, though? Because you see on and off through the season, I mean, he's put wherever there's an open spot, it seems like.
Yeah, well, he's the reason that I would think that might behoove Sporting to flirt with a diamond at least, put him at that top point.
Yep.
Maybe Benny on the left point, Naga on the right point, Uri in the back. But if you had Zusi in that top point of the diamond, it gave him room to float either way from that point. I think it could be really interesting to see how that pans out because he works really well through the midfield. I mean, you've seen what he does. He's hit some awfully good balls from the wing, both for club and for country. But when he's got that room to kind of create in the middle of the park and maybe to link up with the other guys in the midfield, I would love to see him at the point of a diamond and just see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, historically, if you're really looking at the diamond formation, the attacking forward is usually the playmaker in regards to directing the ball, roaming. He directs the entire speed. He runs for the ball, he can finish, he can pass it. And Sousa fits almost every category of that. So I agree. I think a 4-4-2 formation in a diamond would probably be very intriguing, to put it least. Because his talent
is
almost perfect for that spot.
Yeah, he really does have all the tools for that. Now, Peter is committed to 4-3-3, which I think provides maybe a little more option for the high pressure, and he is committed to getting pressure from everybody on the pitch in that 4-3-3. But yeah, when I play what if, I imagine what a diamond would look like, and I kind of like to think about that because it would be an awful lot of fun just to run that out and see what happens.
Yep. So most Sporting fans are probably comfortable with the pairing of Beisler and Olin Cologne, as some people have called him. Do you think, Colin can be very polarizing. It's a high risk, high reward. Is the risk worth the reward?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No question. And again, I always say this is my stock phrase, Colin gets to be Colin because Beisler is Beisler. Colin likes to look down at his shirt sometimes and see he doesn't see 70-80, he sees a 10. And so he goes up tearing up the pitch and winds up in the opposing box. And Beisler is the guy who's going to stay back and not let anything bad happen because Colin's off on a tear. But the thing about Colin is he can get back, and he gives it there and gives the ball away, the shot doesn't go in. He can get back in a hurry as well. You know, he is high risk, high reward. And so I like that pairing. I think the guy who's going to be, if we go into the defenders, Aiko Parra has been a guy who's kind of had to play both roles, the going forward role and the playing back role in that center of defense this year, with Beasler gone on international duty, sometimes Colin being on card suspension. I think Opara has been very good at fitting into that dynamic, no matter who he's been paired with this year. It's not a center back tandem; it's a triad. And you've seen at the end of the games now, they've all three been in there. It's sort of a three center back system. So it's I would say that it's a very good pairing. Colin is definitely worth the risk.
Yeah, I would say he wins those more games than he loses out, if you would look over the history here of the year. But some of the things, it's just who he is, and you know, every player have their own personality. So I like him. I just think he's a very huge character in many ways. So you think they're gonna keep him a year, stay around?
Colin, I think so. He told me, he says, I'd love to stay in Kansas City. I love it here. I'd love to play I'd love to play all my life here. Again, it's going to be a matter of can he get what he's worth on the marketplace to stay here. But you look, he's got roots down here in Kansas City. He's got his clothing business. He's got, he is an outsized character. I mean, he's got. He's got personality to burn, both on the pitch and off the pitch. And I think he has put down roots here. He's become a businessman and become an entrepreneur, designer. And I don't think he wants to give that up very easily. Now, obviously, he's not going to let that hold him hostage economically. But I think he's a guy that they'd like to have around for years to come, absolutely.
Yeah, because defenders are all about experience too. So, I mean, it's one of those positions. So that's basically kind of Beasley and Collins. They're going to be around. I'm guessing you're going to assume both of them, with Ike being a backup consistently through next season?
I'd say at least through next season. Now, do I anticipate people to make a run at both of them in the off season? Absolutely. If I were a European team looking for help at center back, I'd be making a run at any of those three guys. And so they're going to have to entertain those offers. Obviously, it is a business, and yet you weigh, you know, how much you want to keep a guy versus what you're being offered for him. But I think they would really like to have all three going at least for another year. After that, we'll have to this is when Collins' contract is up. I'm not sure if Ike is on a 2-year or 3-year deal. But I think for the next season, especially with Champions League being in the knockout stage there, I would think that they would like to have all three definitely going into next season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they are solid. And it goes back to our cornerstones as well. You know, both Seth and Shant has been phenomenal on the side all year long. Do you think both of them will be remaining around?
I hope so. Seth Sinovic may be I would rate him one of the best, and I mean nothing disparaging by this, maybe the best bargain basement find in MLS in the past 5 years. And he was a minimum salary guy, been let go by New England, had a brief trial with Real Salt Lake. Sporting picked him up for minimum salary. And obviously he's making more than that now. But you look at that initial outlay, what they had to pay to get him, and what he has done for them in return since then. I mean, it just the return on investment for Seth Sinovic has just been fantastic. And I think Chance is a guy that you want to keep around as well. He's, you know, he had the injury problems early in the year. But you look at how he's come out of that. He's back to being the Iron Man that he really likes being. The reason you want them both in is they've got an understanding with each other after playing together for the last three years now. One knows when the other is going, and he needs to stay back, and vice versa. They've got an understanding of when to go, when to stay, what they need to be doing in those roles as de facto wingers without giving up their defensive responsibilities. I think you really have to look at ways to preserve that chemistry and make that a priority, because those guys are so important both to the attack and the defense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the strength of our team this morning has been the defense, right? And the four basic players with Opara being a solid backup has just been one of the reasons of no one being able to score enough, and we don't give people opportunities to score.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're very good at breaking up those attacks on the flanks. And then getting back into the attack and going to press. Good outside back play especially from both sides at once is really kind of a rarity in MLS to have two really, really good fullbacks who are kind of in the zone with each other. That's something you want to keep. Absolutely.
Well, and I think, Seth, you talked about, you know, basically being picked off of the trash bin, right, and being brought into one of the most effective players in MLS at his position. He also reinforced something that Sporting, when Michael Thomas was here, that Sporting Kansas City was doing really well, which is kind of bringing the hometown boys back, you know, have that that dream of playing for, you know, your hometown team. And I think that's an extra incentive. I think if Matt Beisler is weighing his options, we've got a huge argument that, hey, your whole family's here. You're the big man here. And Seth, also as someone, you know, as a Kansas City person, brings to the table, I hope to have more of those homegrown components in our lineup. But I think you can't underestimate what a big deal that is as our academy goes. But in the meantime, we can bring some people back who are away.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I like about the academy is it keeps kids who are here, keeps them here. I think you're going to see college soccer and even high school soccer diminish in importance as in kind of a scouting field for professional clubs as the academy system progresses. I think absolutely you're going to have some late bloomers. You're going to have some kids who are not in a place that's got a good academy system who are going to wind up, you know, in college and still being targets that way. But I think as the academy system progresses and the more and more, you know, clubs are doing that and Sporting continues to build that academy system, the ideal is going to be I'm going to grow up and play for my hometown team. And, you know, you look at John Kempen coming along as a homegrown. You look at Kevin Ellis, who had some pretty solid outings this year in the times he was on the pitch. These are guys that they grew up here. This is their hometown team, and there is that extra level of incentive to play well in front of your hometown fans, to kind of defend your city. And so, I'd love to see more and more guys from here playing on the team.
Yeah, you touched on Kevin Ellis. He haven't had many opportunities here, mostly early stages of the cup, I guess. But do you think they're going to keep him around, or he maybe have no destination to go to anyway?
He's coming off as I think his homegrown is up at the end of the year. I think you have to make a choice between Kevin Ellis and Shaq Jerome. Jerome was pretty valuable early in the season, filling in for Chance when Chance was hurt. In terms of upside, though, I'm not sure if he's got as much upside as Kevin. Kevin seems, you know, Kevin has played both sides this year, left and right back. When he played in the league matches that he was in this year, I thought he looked pretty good out there. I thought he looked aggressive. I thought he looked athletic, and I thought he looked like he was doing on the pitch. I think you keep him around at least one more year, which means, you know, do you let Jerome go? if it's a choice between the two of them for me, maybe you keep Kevin around just because he's had longer in the system. As far as if I were had to make the call today, I really couldn't make the call as to which one of those would stay, which one would go, if they're only going to keep one.
Yeah, and as a fan and a criticizer, I personally do not see what Jerome has done for our team to even deserve an opportunity to remain. He's not a hard worker for his position in regards to how it's left and chance is playing, and he gives up a lot of balls, and his kicks and crosses are very nonchalant, where he doesn't even look or even it just run up and just wing it in and then walk back home, basically. And it doesn't really fit with our style of play.
I think you saw flashes of what he could do, but he's another guy I think that plays might be played better in a different system. And this is not a knock on him. Maybe it's just the system doesn't suit him. Saw some flashes,
yep.
Some good things from him, but maybe it's just not the right fit. And if that's the case, then I'd like to see him someplace where he can thrive in a system that's more suited to what he does.
Absolutely, and that goes for everyone. I mean, we're not here to be mean or bad and talking bad about people, but just like my working life, if I wouldn't be fit somewhere, I would try to find some system or some work that worked better for me. And there's. Same here, soccer is very complex. It's not, it's not the straight formation. It's every formation is different. Every players and all the coaches have different ideas on how they should play. So please, anyone that's listening, don't take it as we are bashing on people. It's just a matter of for what we are playing and what our coach has proven, I do not think certain players are fit for us. And that's nothing wrong. That doesn't make those bad players.
Exactly. It's just some systems fit some people better, and, there's some really, really fantastic players from the past and around the league now who would not fit in the Sporting system. Conversely, there's players, really good players for Sporting who might struggle in some other people's systems. It's just a matter of having the system and matching the talent to it, and I think that's where you have the teams that succeed versus the teams that kind of try to pigeonhole everybody into it. Let's buy a name and try to make the name fit the system instead of let's get the player regardless of reputation and in terms of is this guy famous or not, and we'll get the right players for the system, and that's where Sporting has drawn the success from.
Yeah, and I think you're onto something interesting there, Steve, in terms of Meshack Jerome and Peterson Joseph playing better for Haiti than they do for us, and it may not be a lack of desire. It may just be they don't fit in our system, or we aren't necessarily seeing the best of them when we need. I thought Meshack Jerome looked a lot more promising in the beginning of the season, and then it just really fell away. It fell off to where we are now.
I think that's a fair assessment. I don't think he was really bad early on. I think he was pretty solid as Chance's backup, but he didn't have the flair that Chance had for getting down. And down the side, he didn't have the understanding with Seth that Chance has, and he had quite the ball winning ability that Chance has in his own defensive wing, on the defensive right flank. I think he was serviceable, but I don't think he's a guy that you would want as maybe a day to day right now. And you've got to have backups that you would be okay with day to day. Is my take on things.
Well, and we've got two backups behind our starting goalie. We worked our way all the way back past the back line, and goalkeeper of the year last year. I don't know that Jimmy's been at that same level this year, but maybe he hasn't needed to be because of his back line. Can you assess for us where we are? We've got John Kempin coming back from Orlando, a homegrown, the potential heir apparent long-term person. We've got Eric Kronberg, who's been Mr. Patience himself. And then Jimmy, do you see another season or two? Give us your take on the goalkeeper situation.
I think what happens with Jimmy depends a lot on what happens on December 7th. If he got a chance to go out with an MLS Cup, he's never been shy about saying, that would be the crowning achievement, is to win the MLS Cup. If he gets that, will he stay around, or will he maybe ease out of that top spot and stay around as sort of a de facto extra goalkeeper coach, sort of seed things. Eric Kronberg will be somebody's number one next year. Whether it's Sporting or somebody else's, he will be somebody else's number one next year. He's big, he's athletic. He has been Mr. Patient. He's just been playing behind the guy who doesn't get hurt, who comes back from illness to play, and who has never lost, done anything to lose the job. You're talking about Jimmy. That's one of the things that you saw on the scoreboard before the match. Jimmy acknowledges that people say he's lost a step. But then you look, and there's nobody, and I maintain this, there's nobody in this league better at stoning people on a one-on-one than Jimmy Nielsen. Maybe it's foot saves, maybe it's chest saves, but he has a way of getting in front of people and stuffing those opportunities on balls that are going to be goals against most other keepers in this league. He's not got quite the spring in his legs that he used to have, but he's very good positionally. He's very good at organizing in defense, and he can make the stop when he has to. But how much longer is he going to want to do this?
Well, and I think he's got to be one of the best time wasters in the league.
He's very good at that.
If you need to shut the game down, bring on Jimmy Nielsen.
Well, you saw, he frustrated Juninho into that red card in New York in the last year, or earlier this year. But just by turning into a delay. Now, is he going to get a card for that occasionally? Yeah, he is. I mean, he's smart enough to know where the line is, and he's going to cross it once and get the card, and then he won't cross it again. But he can kill off a match with the best of them, absolutely. If it comes down to that against Salt Lake, then yeah, he'll be back there. He'll catch the ball, and then he'll need to talk to one of his defenders, and then he'll need to place it just in the right spot, and maybe not quite the right spot, and he'll run right up to the end of the time, and he'll get the ball away. That's just part of that veteran presence that he's got.
Well, that game against New York, I mean, Robert De Niro ain't got nothing on Jimmy Nielsen for that. He went down on that fake hit from Juninho, but he definitely sold it for sure.
Oh yeah, it was not a smart move by Juninho, but Jimmy definitely sold it, and that again is just part of the game. Again, if it had been something that Juninho hadn't done, then Jimmy sold as having. Then you wouldn't have. I'd had a problem with it. I'm thinking back to the World Cup where Rivaldo gets bumped someplace on his lower body with a ball thrown to him, and goes down and screaming and grabbing his face. That kind of thing, there's no place for it. But if there's something that the other guy did that he shouldn't have done, then yeah, you get to sell that a little bit more than something that the other guy didn't really do.
Right.
I agree. Yeah, so essentially the Champions League campaign is coming up here. We qualified into the playoffs. And what do you think of our performance? How would you rate it? What do you think of our expectations? Because people talking about that we might be the first MLS team to win the Champions League. And what do you think the chances are about that?
As the second leg of the next round is going to determine that. It's important to get a good result here and to win the first leg. But then you're going to Mexico City, you're going to be playing at altitude against Cruz Azul. Altitude is where low altitude teams go to die, basically. I mean, you look at so many times in the past, North American sides have done well in the first round, then gone down to Mexico, especially if you're playing any place 5,000 feet or above, and struggled because there's just a completely different requirement physically, and the oxygen is as much of that. So I think it's going to be important maybe to have those guys who've had that experience playing at altitude. Zusi, Beisler, Gaylor, I think, has had some experience playing high up in South America. So I think Benny has had some as well, if I'm not mistaken. So I think you're going to need guys out there who know what takes to play up there in the thin air, and what it's going to take to manage that game, because you can't press for 90 minutes at 7,000 feet. It's going to take a lot of adjustment. It's going to take some strategy, but I think if they get past that quarterfinal leg, then who knows? They've got as good a shot as any to be the first MLS club to walk over the Champions League in the new format.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, the Azteca Stadium has always been considered a fortress, one of the hardest places to win in the world, and that goes for national teams and club teams. And ironically enough, Sporting in the first year of opening Sporting Park was also considered a fortress, but like we've noticed this year, that Sporting Park fortress is not quite there, and maybe we can... And quite honestly, the Azteca Stadium haven't been the fortress either if you're looking at the Mexico qualification campaign for the World Cup. It's pretty abysmal, really. But in an essence, it's so unique. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, in essence, I mean, it's such a unique location that where the stadium is at, and, you know, having, I don't know, 110,000 people in the stadium there, it's hard to win. It's home field advantage.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's where Cruz Azul play their home matches or if they've got their own park, but it's the same altitude. I mean, you've got that huge difference to contend with from what you're used to, and you've also got, you know, Latin American home venues can be pretty intimidating. Now, in the first couple of rounds, the turnout didn't look all that great from when I was looking at Olympia and at Real Esteli, but I think once you get into the knockout stages, that's going to change. I think Sporting is going to have to find home goals, though. That's going to be the big thing in the quarterfinal round. They've got to find home goals before they go off, because I don't know how many they're going to be able to pull away on the road. They've got to have a cushion going in.
Absolutely, and yeah. And that's why I meant this comparison between the two stadiums. But then it goes back to, like you said, home goals. We can't go there and hope for a draw or play for a draw, because that's not going to probably work out in that kind of there are too many things that are different compared to any other stadium or any other atmosphere we're playing in. So I just hope that we'll go there with the intent of having a lot of home goals backing us up and do the best we can at that point. And,
I would like to see two. I would think the 2-0 going away would be a pretty good margin. But that's going to require some finishing here.
Yeah, and I think the last game was the first game I've seen two of our forwards score. So maybe next year all our forwards will score a lot.
The last game, I actually asked that at the press box. The last game before that was September 7th against Columbus, when that was C.J. Bieler, and I think maybe also Sooney scored in that. But there were three forwards that scored in that game against Columbus on the 7th. But, yeah, the goals have got to come from someplace. It'd be nice if they came from the front line, but they've got to come from someplace.
Yeah, and hopefully more consistently coming from up front.
Yeah, you'd like to see that. I think everybody would like to see more production from up front to kind of take the pressure off everybody else. This is a team that can score from a lot of different angles. And it seems like in knockout stages, a lot of the goals have come from places that you might not expect. With Seth scoring in the playoffs, Colin has scored a couple. And Lawrence, I still call that last Philadelphia game a playoff game because of the importance of getting home field advantage. And you've got a guy who's never scored before in the league, and he comes up big. So if they can get the goals, it would be great if they could get them from the front line, just because they want their forward scoring. But as long as they can get a couple in the net here against Cruz Azul, I think they'd be in decent shape going down there.
You know, Steve, Ben, for those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to The Beautiful Game on the AMDG Radio Network. This is episode number 4, and I'm Stephen Heiner with Tara Lotti, and we've been chatting with Steve Risenthein about Sporting Kansas City's 2013 campaign. And you heard just now we were talking a little bit about Champions League continuing into next season. Bringing the focus now to next week, We might have thought it was never going to happen, but we finally got that Houston monkey off our back. But with expansion and how the conferences will realign, I don't really know whether Houston is going to be that long-term rivalry that we all enjoy, because we enjoy that rivalry. And as an aside to that, I absolutely love Brad Davis. I know his family lives in Kansas City, and I might be part of a two- or three-person committee to bring Brad Davis to Kansas City. I think pairing him and Zusi would be pretty magical. But what do you think expansion means for Kansas City? And how weird is it to think that St. Louis might be left out in the cold by the time we get to 24?
Well, first, it depends on how they want to keep the conferences aligned. Houston is likely going to push west already, I think, when New York City FC was coming in. Now with Orlando City coming up as well, does that push Sporting west? Could happen. They could wind up on the west side, which I would not be averse to that happening. It would take away the fire as one of the rivals, because we're playing them once a year. But it would keep the rivalry with Houston if Sporting got pushed west by both those teams coming in. 24 without St. Louis. If St. Louis wants to make a credible run at ownership and a venue, then I think they'd have a very good chance. But they've not done that in terms of an MLS quality ownership group and any kind of a venue idea. What's more likely to happen, Sporting would like to start their own USL pro team. I could see that going into St. Louis. I could see that going into Tulsa or Omaha as well, especially Tulsa, given that Joe Max Moore is looking to get back into the game. And his dad was a co-owner of the Roughnecks. He knows the business of that from that side. And it's Tulsa's not all that far away. It just seems strange that the St. Louis is not really heavily in that conversation right now, but there are a lot of places ahead of them. I just saw today Sacramento is really wanting them out of push for a team, which would give you kind of a Bay Area derby with San Jose. I think that some other places, Minneapolis is wanting to make a push. Detroit's wanting to make a push. I think you could very well get to 24 without St. Louis, and there you are. You've got to act pretty quickly in this climate right now, because I think the race for those last three spots, barring any kind of a move by Chivas USA, which I can't rule out either, but right now you're looking at three open spots and a lot of contenders for it.
I think that's very interesting you bring up having our USL Pro team, because obviously the last USL Pro team that we had, became an MLS team that we were affiliated with. But if we can ride Sporting streak here, we create a USL Pro team in St. Louis, and then they become an MLS team too. And then we will have created our own rivalry, Steve. What do you think of that?
that would be kind of interesting to see how that happens. I wouldn't rule it out. I'd love to see an I-70 derby. It'd be great to have a rival that's closer than Chicago, in away days, it's closer than Chicago or Dallas or Denver. Right now, those are your closest away days, and that's insane. Granted, it's not really that easy for Denver either, given where they are. But, you look at away days in most leagues, it's a two-hour coach ride sometimes, or even across town. Here, the closest away day is those three cities. And it's tough. It'd be great to have one that people could drive to. Just make a day of it. Go there, stay for the match, come back the next day. Love it. But the idea of creating the USL Pro team and having them come up, if it worked out that way, it would work out that way, that'd be great. I think it's just important to keep growing the game in this country, growing the professional game, and making working toward the time when there are viable first, second, third tiers, and maybe then you can start looking at promotion relegation. By then, I think the fans are pretty well educated in exactly the nuances of that. But I think you need at least three strong tiers before you do that. Maybe two, but I would say three.
Well, and we need a hell of a television deal.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a big part of it as well.
Yeah, so Steve, so looking forward a little bit, you know, next week, just around, well, this will essentially be end of first half next week. We're in the final, and Sporting Park will be pretty exciting and might be the most exciting soccer match the most fans here or the fan base ever seen. Let's look at, you know, when we played Real Salt Lake earlier in the season, you know, there was some controversy behind that game. You know, Kai Kamara was taken out. Jason Kreis was complaining about us being dirty. And then, of course, Opara scoring in the 97th minute. What do you see is going to happen here? Do you think there will be grudges or anything like that going on?
Well, Sporting and Real have been contentious for years, you know, back to the 2011 preseason when there was that dust up down in Tucson during the preseason match between the two. You know, you look back at that, that's a game that Sporting should have been up 11-10 5 seconds into the match. It was a red card worthy foul that didn't get called. He wound up getting thrown a second yellow later on, but, you know, he did wind up finishing up a man. People were upset about that stoppage time, but what a lot of people forget is that Morales was down the pitch for 2 minutes, roughly, during that they called a minimum of five. He was down on the pitch for a minute and a half, maybe a little bit more, so the referee added the extra time during stoppage time, which is something that you can do. Question of, did Ike push off before the game-winning header? And how much did he push off? It's going to be a contentious match. And these are two coaches who are not, you know, they don't really have a mutual admiration society going on. I think it's going to be contentious. It's going to be pretty chippy from the outset. And I think the atmosphere is going to only kind of turn that up, because I think the crowd is going to magnify every contact. It's going to magnify every little bit of chippiness and feedback on that. So I think it's going to be a really high-intensity match, especially once the two clubs kind of get each other figured out after the first half hour. I think it's going to be just high energy, high contention, and high tension all the way through to the final whistle.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I got home from the last game, and by the time I got home, first thing I did was sit down on my computer and logged on to my account to renew for the final. So it should be a great time, and hopefully it will turn out for the better here.
Yeah, you got to buy them at those bargain prices, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, yeah, there's that as well. You know, the latest thing with the tickets, that just adds more fuel to the rivalry fire. The other thing is that Kansas City, and I wrote about this last week, Kansas City is so starved for a title in any sport. A league title, in other words, the Open Cup Championship last year and the Open Cup Championship in 2004. But no team from Kansas City has won a league title since 2000 when the Wizards did it. And they haven't hosted a chance to win a league title since 1985 when the Royals won the series. The city is absolutely starved for a champion. And I think that just even adds more to it. People want to celebrate a title here. Whether it's soccer, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, they want to celebrate a title here in Kansas City. And I think that's just going to add as well to the intensity level next Saturday.
No, you're right. I mean, those of us who are, you know, true blue soccer fans, we definitely consider the Open Cup trophy as silverware, but the rest, you try to explain that to your non-soccer friends, they're like, well, what is that? Is that just like a consolation prize? And you're like, wait, okay, well, but MLS Cup, they get that. They get that that's sort of our Super Bowl. So it's a chance, and it would be a cap to a remarkable rise. You know, of soccer in Kansas City. You know, you mentioned that there's no mutual admiration society between Jason Kreis and Peter Vermes, but don't you see RSL as just the Western Conference Sporting Kansas City? I mean, a great stadium, a great fan base, they've got decent songs and chants, and it's a team-first mentality. They don't have a bunch of stars, and they even have two regular U.S. men's national team players in Raimondo and Beckerman like we do in Beisler and Soucy. I mean, Are we playing ourselves?
In a lot of ways. Different formation unless Peter decides to roll out the diamond. But, yeah, you know, hard-nosed coach, passionate coach, hard-nosed club. You know, both teams pride themselves on defense. One of the things about Salt Lake is Beckerman is one of the best in the league at blowing up opposing attacks. So very hard-nosed, very passionate, good goalkeeping. Now, Romano is more of the athletic goalkeeper who's got to make up for that lack of height. You know, especially he's been in the league forever. To see him still with those hops that he's got and still the springs in his legs, these guys, just amazing. Jimmy, again, is more the positional guy than the athletic, acrobatic save kind of guy. But you've got solid goalkeeping, you've got solid defense, you've got hard-nosed work in the midfield, and you've got opportunistic scorers, some of the top. I think in a lot of ways they are playing themselves. There's a lot of similarities, and they're not huge market. They're not glamour clubs. And this MLS Cup is a triumph for that team-first approach, for the idea of having coaches in the league who play in the league. And that was going to be the case, I think, no matter who made it in. Because you look at Portland, you look at Houston, the same kind of a thing where you've got the team-first approach, and that Portland's maybe a little prettier than they are gritty sometimes, but that idea of you work with guys who are not marquee names, and you win that way as a team. And I think this is a good final for MLS because it showcases what MLS is at its best, I think.
I agree. Shows you that anyone can win, and the salary cap or however system we have kind of works. Maybe could be a little bit higher to retaining, get better talent, but with time I think that will happen as well. So, kind of to wrap this up a little bit, what do you, I'm going to ask you what your prediction is, and I will ask you as a journalist, because I would, you being living here in Kansas City, I would guess that you would, want them to win and predict them to win. I mean, what do you see happening? Do you think that they are, what do you think the outcome will be? And how do we get there?
I don't see it decided. I don't see it decided in the first 90 minutes. And I don't see a shutout either way. I think this is going to be. I think it's going to be 1-1 after 90. I think that it's going to. If I'm going to pick who scores, Kansas City, it seems like they played better from behind all through the playoffs. And it seems like that. So I think the Salt Lake picks up an early one, probably Sabo if he plays. Then I'm going to say that Sporting gets one back, maybe between the 39th and 50th, around there. And I think that's going to come probably, I'm going to call it on a ball from Colin. He seems like he's been finding the net a lot in the playoffs. So it goes to overtime there. Then that's where things get a little dicey. I don't know if it's decided in overtime or if it goes to a shootout. But if it's decided in overtime, I think maybe if it's decided in overtime, if Beeler doesn't start, then Beeler's going to come on late in regulation, and Beeler picks up the winner in overtime. That's the way I would call it right now.
Well, it would be a good story, right, for him. It would be the hero, even though it's been benched most of the season.
Well, he did the same thing against New England. Came on late and scored the winner to put him in against Houston. Be a nice story of coming on late again after not doing a whole lot late in the season. It'd be Colin. We talked about high risk, high reward, Colin's the guy who again just wants to come out and give everything. Of course, you look at all the guys that want to come out and give everything, but Colin is just so outside in his personality. You can tell when he's putting everything out there. And I think he would really like he'd really love to be the guy who scores in the MLS Cup. But I think if there's a club that scores first, I think Salt Lake scored first. That's just the way things have gone. Is the opposition scored first, and then Sporting have risen to it every time. So if
well,
there's a model for
that's the story of the season, right there.
Yeah, it's just definitely the story of the playoffs. I mean, you look at Houston when there was that crazy goal early in the second leg here, and you could feel the air go out of the stadium for a little bit, and then all of a sudden you just pick right back up again. They got back in it, and then they won in the second half. It seems like they've played better with their feet to the fire in the postseason, and you know maybe that works out for them again in the final.
So would that be the Cinderella story? I mean, we have one of the lowest salaries of any team in MLS.
I don't know, maybe not Cinderella because they've been at the top of the East, you know, since they moved to the stadium. And they've got, they do have that reputation for being among the East's best teams each year. But what I think it would be is a triumph for, especially after LA has carried it the last however many years, it would be a triumph for that kind of blue-collar soccer. The idea that you get guys in who fit your system, that you don't have to spend a gigantic amount of money to win in this league. And so I don't know about Cinderella, but it would definitely be a triumph for blue-collar soccer.
No, I think you're spot on with that. And I think, you know, RSL are coming in here with something to prove after getting beaten at home by DC United, the worst team in the league, but apparently, you know, untouchable in the Open Cup run. They're going to come in with something to prove. I don't know.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think that might be the only challenge for Sporting Kansas City is, you know, we're hungry for it, and we've got so many things going for us, but maybe, you know, we don't have that chip on our shoulder as much as RSL might have coming into this. Because, you know, our trophy drought, you know, was what, last year? So at least, you know, we picked
yeah.
up a trophy recently, and they're hungry, and that might – I think it'll be who wants it more is going to be the big storyline that day.
You know, I don't know about who wants it more because I think both, you know, Sporting had this tremendous pressure to live up to the expectations, especially in front of the home fans. Real have want to prove that the Open Cup loss, there's no reason they should have lost to DC United. It was a fluke. I don't know about who wants it more, but it's who maintains the focus. Who doesn't in a final? It's about who doesn't make the mistakes, and that's some kind of pressure. So it's who withstands the pressure. I think the desire is going to be there for both sides. It's going to be who withstands the pressure, who doesn't make the mistakes, and who can capitalize on the opportunities the other team gives them. And that's going to be it's going to be decided on maybe something as small as a bad link up in the midfield, and somebody who pounces on that. It's one of those things where in a final you've got to maybe be a little more cagey, where it's better to be gritty than pretty, as is kind of one of my mantras. But it's going to be about who doesn't blink, and because they both want it, they both have really good reasons for wanting it. It's going to be about who doesn't blink and who can make the other team pay for the mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it won't be about who gets taken out in the eighth second, you know, of the match.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see how gritty they are if they want to make that early statement. But Steve, it's been a real pleasure having you with us. I know that it's Thanksgiving weekend, and I'm sure you've got a lot of other stuff to get to. But thanks for being with us and sharing your knowledge and wisdom. And hopefully this time next week, we'll be on our way to. We'll probably be on the edge of our seats, but. Hopefully not cruising to a win, but earning a victory.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy one. Thanks again for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. And I hope I've acquitted myself well.
You have. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you
very much.
Well, I mean, I thought that was a very good conversation we had with Steve, and I think I told you that I thought he did a good job of helping me correct my perception of Graham Soucy, you know, vis-a-vis what he's been doing for the national team and what he's been doing for us.
Absolutely. I mean, I am also on that bandwagon of criticizing him at times, as I think he sometimes try to take too much upon himself, and maybe it's just the fans being overly criticizing as they usually are, in good or bad.
Yeah, well, fans never criticize anything, ever.
No, that's true. We always know better, though.
All right. Well, I thought that was a good wrap-up, not just for our very short season of The Beautiful Game, but for some Kansas City fans who've been pleased and impressed with a very hard-working Kansas City team who we believe and hope will take home an MLS Cup next week. As we said, this is the end of our season of podcasting. Our network takes a break in December, but we will be back next season, starting in January, discussing Major League Soccer, the Premier League, Champions League, and the all-important World Cup, which we will get to next summer. Per, I know your heart's broken a little bit, but as Ibra said, a World Cup without me is not worth watching, right?
I'm pretty much right there, too. I can't think of anything to really care to follow at this point.
Right. You can find us in the iTunes store and on Stitcher. Just subscribe to the AMDG Radio Network. The network has a collection of shows on current events, pop culture, travel, the permanent things, and sport, of which we are the main representative. If you like what you've heard or you want to learn more, ask questions. We have questions for Steve, which we can forward to him. You can find us at soccer@amdgradio.com. That's soccer@amdgradio.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheBeautifulGameRadio. And finally on Twitter at T, the letter T, Beautiful Game. Leave us ratings and reviews on iTunes. That helps our show get found more easily. And since it's a network, make sure you mention the name of our show, The Beautiful Game, in your review. Per, it's a pleasure as always. Look forward to seeing you at the game next week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to next season, too.
Until next time, whether you're watching, learning, or playing, enjoy The Beautiful Game. We'll send you out with one of the best-produced pieces of sporting Kansas City media this year.
37 games, 14 shutouts, over 400,000 minutes played, 2,600 miles covered, 794 tackles, 737 crosses,
41 stitches,
73 saves,
591 shots,
51 goals,
309 days.
It all comes down to one game.
One game.
One game.
One game.
One game.
One game. 90 minutes.